You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, August 11th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Adam Green of the PCCC on Hillary Clinton's announcement yesterday that she is proposing a debt-free tuition at public colleges and how that policy, how that idea went from a Demos white paper to being adopted now by every Democrat running for the presidency, except for maybe Jim Webb. I'm not sure. We've got to check in with No Labels to find out what he's supporting these days. Meanwhile, in outside of Ferguson, 23 people arrested in protests over the evening. Oath Keepers have showed up, presumably to keep the peace. Also, the TPP. Is it dead? The Economist thinks so. And a heartwarming story of Joe Lieberman re-entering politics to promote war. Rick Perry apparently not paying his staffers in South Carolina and possibly around the country. Oops. And Donald Trump reportedly paying Breitbart.com for coverage. We've got a proposal for Donald Trump as well. Stick around. We will announce that proposal on this program today. Meanwhile, the uninsured rate continues to fall across the country, as does the number of teachers who are interested in teaching. And lastly, I will, of course, have some comments on what's happening with Bernie Sanders. 25,000 people in Portland, 27,000 in L.A. And as you know, an earlier event in Portland was interrupted by two protesters from the Black Lives Matters movement. I have an alternative, an alternate version. My understanding is on this program yesterday, there was a lot of calls and IMs as to Bernie Sanders supporters, of which I count myself as one, who were upset that in some way, I'm not quite sure, of what the nature of the anger is, because it's quite clear that none of this is particularly hurting Bernie Sanders. I mean, I guess if I was in attendance at an event that I thought Bernie Sanders were going to speak at and he didn't end up speaking because of the protest, I guess I'd be annoyed or pissed off. But at the end of the day, that's not really what this is about, right? Bernie Sanders can go on a speaking tour at any time. He can go on a book tour. I'm sure he could write a book. In the future. The bottom line is he has a campaign for the nomination of the Democratic Party to be president. And to the extent that he is, his campaign is being impacted by the Black Lives Matters protesters, I think it's being helped. And this is what I mean when I say that. One, it's clearly not inhibiting Bernie Sanders' ability to draw people. 25,000 in Portland, 27,000 in L.A. That's a lot of people. Nearly a half year out from when people are going to start voting anywhere. It is not hurting him in the eyes of the establishment media. They don't care one way or another. What it is forcing him to do is to broaden his message and find a way to appeal to a massively important constituency if you want to be the Democratic nominee. That's just the bottom line, folks. If Bernie Sanders is going to win this, if he's going to become the Democratic nominee, he is only going to do so if he gets large support from the minority community. That's the bottom line. And you can argue that he has bona fides in terms of civil rights, and I would argue that he does. But it is still clear that large swaths of the progressive movement do not get the message. And I'll lay it out one more time as I understand it. That is, there is a large percentage of minority people in this country, of African Americans, who, from my opinion, have a very rational fear that the one institution in society that is supposed to protect and serve and keep the peace is actually a threat to them. That they don't have the same option that a white person does in terms of calling the police to help them out. They don't have the opportunity to have an interaction with the police without feeling threatened in some fashion. And that is a very rational response. I mean, sometime back we had on this program, was it Will Potter, who wrote the book about environmentalists being targeted by the FBI, environmental activists. And I remember feeling this was outrageous, that story. Outrageous. Well, now imagine if he had come on and said, hey, we've had 25 unarmed environmentalists being shot by the police over the past year. Now imagine that you didn't have the option to not be an environmental activist, that you weren't engaging in any behavior, you were just alive. It's a very rational response, and it's a very real response. And this movement is asking for very specific proposals on how to deal with this, what they perceive to be, and I think in a, just editorializing, I think in a very rational, as a very rational response, an emergency in their community. And Bernie Sanders is certainly moving towards them because he understands the political realities of this. So this is not hurting, and I would argue probably the merits of it. So this is not hurting Bernie Sanders. In fact, I would argue the opposite. It's going to help Bernie Sanders. This is going to help provide him an entree into a community whose votes he needs if he wants to be the presidential nominee. And, you know, I don't think any of this is over, and nor should I think it should be. So I'll have more to say in the fun half. And adding that if you're really concerned about a threat to Bernie Sanders' electability, we can talk about Lawrence Lessig. And we will do that in the fun half of the program, or maybe after we talk to Adam. We're going to take a quick break and talk to Adam Green, because the success involved in the PCCC getting Hillary Clinton to sign on to this this policy is textbook leveraging of political power to get a policy agenda front and center. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone, folks. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the program the co-founder, one of the co-founders, I guess, of the Progressive Change Campaign Committee, Adam Green. Hello, Adam.
Hello, Sam Seder. Good to talk to you.
Adam, now, you come on the program always, I think, in a, or I should say, we bring you on when you have triumphs, and sometimes we bring you on when you don't have triumphs. But it is a function of how well you guys do what you do that you've been on this program on so many occasions. And this is, I think, a rather unreported, somewhat unreported. It's getting some attention. But it's a big deal in terms of the dynamics of the progressive movement. And when you hear about just sort of the different sort of, I guess, cross currents as people are trying to figure out what does the progressive movement, what does actually going after and getting policies made after an era of President Obama look like, I think this is a model. But before we get into that, tell us what the debt-free, I mean, we've talked about it on this program a little bit, but tell us what debt-free tuition, what this policy that came out of the Demos think tank, what it is.
So debt-free college is basically the idea that when people graduate, on graduation day, they leave with zero debt. And I should say, it's a result. It's not a specific program. There could be many right ways to do it. The three general legs of the stool tend to include major federal aid to states to allow them to bring down the cost of tuition at public colleges and universities, major federal aid to students, namely Pell Grants, which are more need-based and allow students to pay some of their costs, and then some innovations around the edges. To give one example, in some cases, if somebody wants to lateral over from a community college to a four-year institution, the four-year institution won't accept credits from a community college, whereas if there were a couple reforms put in place that increase the quality of education at that community college, it both benefits people at that school and allows people to go to a four-year institution for cheaper as opposed to redo the first 2 years. Those are the three legs of the stool. And this is an idea that the policy think tank Demos really kind of coined the term debt-free college. And the PCCC has been a major organizing force the last 7 months trying to meticulously get it into the bloodstream. I'm going to talk a little bit about how it's been done. But yesterday was a major moment. Hillary Clinton putting forth her most expensive, biggest investment ever so far, $350 billion, which would result in millions of people going to college debt-free. Really big landmark accomplishment there.
Politico is calling it almost like her version of in terms of like a policy ambition, her version of healthcare reform on some level. But it seems to me what is really a key here, because Bernie Sanders has a similar idea, has bought in also obviously to the concept of debt-free college. He's saying make it free. We can debate the merits of one way to get there versus the other. I'm in favor, it happens to be, of free college. But the important thing here is that in Hillary Clinton buying into this policy or buying into the principle that there should be an option for Americans to go to college and leave college without debt, that is, it seems to me, is huge.
It's really huge. It really marks a huge shift in the center of gravity on this debate. I mean, really, in 2014, this was not a centerpiece dominant issue, and to the extent that it was an issue, people were talking about tinkering with interest rates, which is important, and that was a conversation starter. But again, there's just been a huge movement due to progressive movement organizing to move the entire debate to really addressing the principle, addressing underlying college costs, and establishing a national goal of debt-free college, not as a pie-in-the-sky idea, but as one that mainstream candidates are talking about. And I should say that this is really, kind of the second time that we've done this as a movement. The first in recent history was was expanding Social Security benefits. Right in the heat of seeing CPI and the White House budget proposing cuts, a group of us met at the NetRoots Nation conference and made a decision together that we want to go on offense on that issue. And there's a long version of the story, but cut to the chase, we're now at a place where 42 out of 44 Senate Democrats have voted to expand Social Security benefits. It's really seen as the default position for Democrats in general these days, and it's just logically absurd for people to be in favor of cuts now that we've moved to the debate. Similarly, 1 year ago at Netflix Nation, a number of us got in the room, us, Move On, Democracy for America, some others, and made an active decision that we were going to push big, bold economic populist ideas to the center of the 2016 debate starting in 2015. And that we would, in many cases, follow Elizabeth Warren's lead. In this particular issue, we actually, led ourselves, and Elizabeth Warren is now one of the leaders on it. And we wanted to basically open up political space around this issue and mainstream it. And we've gotten, Chuck Schumer, who, this week caused some controversy in other realms, but
right.
Chuck Schumer and Elizabeth Warren to team up on a resolution in favor of debt-free college now has 20 senators on it, including Jeanne Shaheen from the politically significant state of New Hampshire, Kirsten Gillibrand, who had Hillary Clinton's old seat, and a bunch of others. We have 50 members of the House, including numerous former DCCC chairs and the current DCCC chair, Ben Ray Lujan. And, 200 Iowa and New Hampshire political leaders stepped out on the same day endorsing big, bold economic populist ideas, including debt-free college. So this really kind of created the space for someone like Hillary Clinton to seize this opportunity and do it with confidence. So again, this is a real, not just a policy victory, and it's not just a coincidental victory. This is an earned victory, and a lot of progressive movement actors work together to mainstream this idea, leading to Hillary Clinton endorsing it yesterday.
I think if people go back and listen to our interviews, I'm sure other interviews that you've done, but particularly our interviews through the years, they're going to get a very good sense of just like what is, let's step back here for a minute. Because I want to talk about process. People can go back and look at those interviews and get a really good sense of just like what you guys at the PCCC do, why it has been so successful. I mean, we're not there yet in terms of being able to vote or to pass legislation that expands Social Security. We're not there yet at a point where we can pass legislation that says debt-free college. But when you have a major political party, there's two of them that are the two biggest political parties. When you have one that has these sort of bedrock policy principles, that's huge, because one day there's going to be an opportunity to enact this stuff. And this stuff is going to already be non-controversial within that party. We just get so everybody gathers. You get a notion where there's a consensus. We're going to focus on this. How does that leverage happen? What, you know, walk us through this, because it is fascinating to see what's happening with the Republican Party on one hand, and see the sort of the dynamics that are at play there, and how sort of there's a weird leveraging of non-policy on some level. And then when you look into the you know, it seems to me on the Democratic side, people are trying to figure out, like, how do you get these people ostensibly who are elected on, you know, as supposedly the more populist party, at least economically, how do you get them to reflect the policy desires of the members of that party?
Yeah, it's definitely a question that a lot of people have been asking. And, you know, a lot of it is about seizing opportunities and really kind of having a long or medium-term plan. So, you know, for us, this kind of chapter began right after the 2014 election. And my co-founder, Stephanie Taylor, who you know, she, you know, really kind of was the main force behind us, you know, saying, we, you know, 2014 was lost because the Democratic Party brand did not stand for big ideas. A mother did not wake up on election day thinking, my ability to send my kid to college at an affordable rate is at stake today, right? It really wasn't an election about nothing. When we've had an election about something, whether it was 2006 around the Iraq War or 2008 around change, you know, then we win. And, you know, we want to get back to that place. So we started this process through our sister organization, the Progressive Change Institute, called the Big Ideas Project. And basically, it allowed anybody to submit an idea they thought progressives should be focused on the next 2 years. So we had policy think tanks like Demos submit ideas, the AFL-CIO submitted one on infrastructure, former Senators Byron Dorgan and Ted Kaufman submitted various Wall Street reforms, Alan Grayson submitted some, Hank Johnson submitted some criminal justice reform ones, and a bunch of our members, thousands of our members, submitted ideas. And over the course of a month, 1 million votes were cast on about 2,600 ideas. Debt-free college was among the ones that got, you know, top number of votes. Expand Social Security, variations of Wall Street reform, campaign finance reform, other economic populist ideas were at the top. And from there, the Progressive Change Institute did a national poll to find out, okay, given that we know what has, you know, this critical mass among the base, let's show the political viability of this stuff. Spent more money than we've ever spent before on a poll, 1,500 likely voters, and wouldn't you know it, debt-free college was 71% to 19% popular among likely voters, Democrat, Republican, Independent. Also, you know, for people that didn't show up to vote in 2014, we asked them what issue, you know, for each issue we polled, would this issue have motivated you to show up if somebody had been campaigning on it? And there was a whole array of answers. The number one most motivational issue to Democrats who failed to show up in 2014 was debt-free college. It resonates with young people, resonates with working parents, resonates with grandparents who care about their grandkids. It's leanings, people understand it. And it's not chump change. We're talking tens of thousands of dollars back in the pocket of people, allowing them to, liberating them to live their lives, right? And, you know, it's a little bit of a long story, but, you know, you asked about the strategy, and this is really the foundation, because that polling allowed us to go to Capitol Hill, armed with polling information, making a case to Democrats who were really shell-shocked at the 2014 elections. And to their credit, you know, Chuck Schumer's office took an immediate liking of this idea, among others, right? It was popular. You know, he's actually in charge of finding new policies for the Democratic caucus. And, you know, knowing that he was on board, we went around and just found that all these other members of Congress also were really into it. And, you know, again, fast forward a couple of months, we were able to launch the Schatz-Schumer-Warren resolution in the Senate, the Grijalva-Ellison-Clark resolution in the House, and really open up broad swaths of political space in Congress, sending a signal to presidential candidates about, you know, the kind of support they would have if they went forward. Right? It wasn't pie in the sky. Very credible people across the ideological spectrum could unite around this very progressive issue. and again, similarly in Iowa and New Hampshire, we organize leaders. So it wasn't just a petition. It wasn't just a one-time ask. It was months and months of one step leading to the next. And, you know, Martin O'Malley was the first presidential candidate to come out for Debt-Free College. Bernie Sanders actually has not endorsed the concept of Debt-Free College yet. He's endorsed free tuition, but there's an entire second side of the ledger, which is non-tuition costs.
Right.
Which both, you know, O'Malley plan and the Clinton plan address. And, you know, Bernie Sanders certainly has a big financial number, and it's certainly big and bold. It's a big idea. We're actually hoping that he soon endorses the concept of Debt-Free College. But either way, at this point, all three of the top presidential contenders are in the same ballpark, which is, you know, a massive infusion of investment in making college more affordable, legitimizing the idea of either free college or, you know, free tuition or debt-free college, which is just a sea change from where we were 6-7 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge, it seems to me. When you have as a principle where the Democratic Party, as manifested in whoever their eventual banner carrier is going to be, this concept that it is because in some ways what you're doing is you're basically, this is sort of the same concept with the Affordable Care Act. For all its flaws, the idea that it begins to build upon is this idea that health care is a right. And this pushes the idea that higher education is a right. I mean, it's not and that the function of government is to provide an opportunity for people to have an education that is unburdened by the notion of, if I go to college, I can't go and do something like teach or social work or become an artist, or I've got to write off half of the potential careers that I might have wanted, so that I can actually go out and pay off this debt. And that to me is just huge, to have it be a bedrock principle, because I think people forget this is the way it was for at least a segment of the population for a long time. Like, you know, we had GI bills that allowed people to go to college for free. We had more or less a great system of state colleges, depending on the state, where you could go more or less for free. And
absolutely.
To the extent that, people talk about American exceptionalism, this was one of the things that made America a very strong country.
No doubt. And for anybody who's wondering about, you know, the price tag, like you said, the GI Bill actually had a 7-to-1 return on investment, dollar spent in terms of payback, you know, for the American economy. It was an investment in our future. It wasn't just spending money, right? This is how we actually grow the economic pie. You know, one kind of question that we ask ourselves is, if the next Google co-founder exists, is that person going to be free when they graduate college, assuming they graduate college and not drop out like the Google people did? Will that person be free to actually start their small business, or will they have to take some office job for several years to try to pay back their loans, right? Mm-hmm. Can people who, I think there's actually a huge progressive brain drain with people going to corporate America to pay off student loans as opposed to, doing something that actually helps society. But also on a very functional level, can people start a family? Can people buy a home? Can people buy a car? Or are they saddled with debt and living with their parents for the next decade after college? So that is, the policy part of this. You know, on the bigger picture progressive side of this, if we're successful, well, first, again, this stands for the large proposition that activism matters, right? As uphill as it seems sometimes, it is possible to engage in activism that genuinely changes the national debate and shifts the focus of the parties. It's a lot of hard work. There are setbacks along the way. But for those who ever, are uninspired, this can be an inspiring moment and focus us all in trying to do effective activism. Two, it stands for the proposition that the government can fundamentally help people's lives, right? You know, it's not just about this one, student debt issue. You know, that we have a Democratic Party willing to take the Republican attacks, you're raising taxes, this is more big government, and say, yes, this is government helping people's lives, and it's a proper role of government. That opens the door for lots of other proper roles of government, right? So there's a larger, center of gravity thing going on here, where really the Elizabeth Warren wing, this rising economic populist tide, is in full force. And the final thing I would say is really inviting your listeners, help us with the next chapter of this. And basically our goal is to have a Democratic Party that is united around this big idea, of debt-free college. And actually last week we had a big national candidate training, 200 state, local, some federal candidates in D.C., and many of them went home, in addition to having great skills to campaign effectively and win, with an intent, if they're in a current legislature or on a town council, of a Democratic committee locally, of offering local debt-free college resolutions. So we can show a groundswell of Democratic Party unity across the country. So if folks want to go to our webpage, boldprogressives.org, email us, info@boldprogressives.org. We actually do read it. And if you want to get a local resolution to offer on your local level, please do that, and that will actually help drive national news. If people listening to this work for a member of Congress, we're going out this week to every member of Congress who's a Democrat who has not yet signed on to the Senate and House resolutions, asking them to sign on to show Democratic Party unity. If somebody works for a candidate, we're asking candidates to issue public statements and send them to us. And again, we'll send them to national press, info@boldprogressives.org. So, this was a huge moment, but it's, one chapter along a larger story where we're trying to really solidify that the Democratic Party stands for something, stands for big ideas, and does so with unity. So that's our goal going forward. And if we're successful, we can have a huge progressive voting moment in January 2017 because we'll have the wind at our back and a solid concrete mandate that's undeniable.
All right. Now, and let me just repeat the address because you're breaking up just a little bit. It's boldprogressives.org. We're going to put a link at majority.fm. And you can be emailed at info@boldprogressives.org. If you're working for a campaign, large or small, it doesn't matter. And anybody's going to put out a statement of support or offer up a resolution in a town council, a city council, I don't know, in the local comptroller's meeting. It doesn't matter, really. You want to show that it's spreading around. Okay, so let me be like my 10-year-old daughter and watch the end of this before we go forward. So you guys continue to build the groundswell of support. One can imagine a Bernie Sanders or a Hillary Clinton, and I guess, in theory, a Martin O'Malley, standing on stage with Donald Trump and saying or whoever the Republican nominee will be, and this being an issue, this becomes one of those tentpole issues, and making the Republican candidate say, like, no, I don't believe in the idea that someone should graduate college without debt. I mean, this that's a great debate to have in this country when you can actually put the notion of big government or of government intervention in very practical terms. When people see, like, hey, wait a second, we talk about freedom. The thing that's curtailing my freedom right now is that I wanted to get a better education.
Yeah, so that is where this should wind up. I mean, there will be a debate over some issues. Republicans will attack Democrats on whatever Democrats propose. The question is, are we taking smart fights, right? If they want to attack us on the losing end of a 71% to 19% issue, let them do that.
Right.
I mean, yesterday we saw yelping and squealing from Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and the Republican National Committee, again, saying this is higher taxes, this is bigger government, this is investing in an old education system where what we should really just have is a bunch of online courses to make college affordable. Like, really? That's your solution? You pretty much eliminate college. Marco Rubio has this thing that we're calling indentured degrees, where basically rich people adopt poor people and have help put them through college and then have a share of their earnings for perpetuity. Like, it's crazy. That's one vision of America. Or we can say to people who feel this issue every day, don't need to explain to them, help is on the way. Your kids can actually go to college and not be saddled for life with debt. It's a crippling debt. It's a winning message. And again, it lines us up. We're looking at January 2017 as the next potential progressive governing opportunity.
Right.
It will require a mandate, especially if there's still a Republican House. It needs to be undeniable that Democrats campaigned on this issue and have a mandate on this issue and crush Republicans on this issue in order to get some Republicans across the fold and actually put something like this into law. So that's why this can't just be endorsed on a website. We need this to be a centerpiece issue of the 2016 election, from top to bottom of the ticket. And that's what all of our efforts are going towards. This and other big ideas like Wall Street reform, campaign finance reform, major investment in jobs and wages. That's how we really achieve a mandate in 2016 and govern in 2017.
It's also, I got to say, the political, the dynamic here around it from a political argument. I mean, with a democratically controlled Senate, a Democrat in the presidency, I would hate to be one of those members of Congress who's going to argue that we shouldn't have debt-free college, because this is not like, you know, there's no death panels here, right? I mean, there's a lot of people who have this debt, and it's hurting a lot of people across the country. And it's a great story, Adam, and I really I love your organization, and I honestly, if people want to see the path in which you slowly, inch by inch, take policy ground, go back and listen to my talks with Adam Green, because it's a lot of it's laid out right there. Adam, good luck. It's boldprogressives.org, info@boldprogressives.org. We'll put that stuff at majority.fm. Thanks so much for coming on today.
Sounds great, Sam. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. All right, folks. I'll take an IM or two. I mean, when we talked about, I can't remember, maybe it was back a couple of years ago when I went on up and said Democrats in 2014 should, maybe this is back in 2013, should be supporting increasing Social Security. Expanding Social Security. I remember there was one or two people emailed me like, that is a joke. Do you think anybody's going to support that? Do you think that's going to happen? Since that time, you now have, was it 2012?
I think you first said it in 2012.
Well, nevertheless.
I mean, you pushed it in 14 strong, but I think you first said it in 2012.
Nevertheless, you now have a Democratic caucus that is behind that idea. And by 2016, you're going to have a Democratic caucus that is behind this idea. And there is no going from some dude on the internet saying the idea to it becoming law without going through this part of the process. So this is progress. It is getting society to accept the idea that this should just be a principle. Like, this is the right concept. How you get there, that's where the argument should be. I mean, that's the mistake that I think, like, a lot of these new no labels thing. And, you know, this sort of ties back into Trump on some level for me. The establishment in this country, the establishment media, the conventional wisdom, whatever you want to call it, even most people who don't follow politics that much, but who may, whose idea of society is what we would characterize as liberal. They don't understand that the principles of the conservative movement and the Republican Party are completely misaligned from what they perceive to be shared goals. In other words, when you hear people talk about, like, we don't want rancor, we just want Washington to work, they don't understand that there's a disagreement, not just on how to get there, but on where to go. They don't understand that it's actually a controversial statement that if we have the ability to provide debt-free higher education, that we should. They don't understand that there's a large portion of the country, there is an entire political party, a political ideology that is against that very idea, not on how we get there best, but against that idea. They think that idea is wrong, and there's a multitude of reasons why they think it's wrong, because it becomes the safety net becomes a hammock, because it allows the less talented to go to school. Whatever it is, And so forcing the Democrats, and it is, whether it's forcing or not, I don't care. I don't care if, you know, Hillary Clinton in, you know, wakes up at 4 a.m. and goes, damn it, I wish that we could have debt full college. It doesn't make a difference to me. I don't care what's any in the hearts of any politician. It's much better when you can make a politician do something they don't necessarily want to do, because that means that you have the power. So that in the event that they are faced with any pushback, there's power there. It's not just their own personal feelings. And this whole issue is a great example of it. It's going to pay dividends politically, and then it's going to pay dividends in terms of people's lives. So, great stuff. Great stuff. Very happy about it. All right, we got a lot to talk about. The Economist wrote this weekend that they think the TPP is dead because of the negotiations that seem to fail on Hawaii. And look, if you can't get it done in Hawaii, right? Or maybe when you get negotiations like that, you get to do it in somewhere like Siberia, where it's like, yeah, you want to leave the room? Go ahead. It's going to be nasty out there. Maybe the problem is they did it in Hawaii. Right? I mean, we don't make a deal, but at least I get to. Maybe there's just too much incentive to continue on with the negotiation. We should have another round of talks.
Totally disagree. See you next week.
Look, let's just break for the weekend. Let's extend for another 3 weeks. Now, just
absolutely
because.
Absolutely not. Dude.
Even if the TPP is dead, that doesn't. You still have a trade promotion authority, which basically means that just about anything can pass without a tremendous amount of scrutiny. But it's nice to know that this model is going to be ineffective for at least these 12 countries, including us. Who knows what happens in terms of Europe, but it really is some of those countries with a less rigorous environmental and labor regulatory scheme, I guess, and with a more liberal patent and copyright scheme. That's who you don't want to get into a trade deal with when it's structured like the TPP, because then it's basically a race to the bottom in terms of labor, consumer, citizen, environmental protections. Also, yes, I'm going to touch on the fact that Donald Trump was disinvited. It doesn't matter. They can't touch him. He's like Firestorm. I don't know if it's Firestorm or what. What is the character who, like, when you shoot a laser beam at him, Matt, okay, all it does is it makes them more powerful because it absorbs the energy. I know I'm going to get like 47 IMs about it, but that's what Donald Trump is now. And I am quite enjoying it. We should have pulled this, but Michael Steele, incidentally, was on before me on Hayes last night. The last thing he said when Hayes said, all right, we're going to go on to the next topic, say goodbye to Michael, tell Sam he was right and I was wrong.
Wow.
That was about the debate, about the response. I will explain what that was all about, too. So good for him. Very good sport.
Good for him.
Well, good for him.
What a gentleman and a scholar.
He was a gentleman. Well, I wouldn't say a scholar. I would say a scholar. He's not a scholar, but he's
a
gentleman.
Sort of
he's a gentleman.
Yeah.
And I'm obviously I'm going to touch on the Black Lives Matter protesters. I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of IMs about it. I think we already have. And I'm going to talk about Lawrence Lessig, who has announced that he's going to jump into the race. I have always been a big supporter of Lawrence Lessig. I've interviewed him many times. This, to me, is a baffling decision. And in my opinion may move from baffling to just outright criticism, maybe in the next 4 minutes, maybe in the time that it takes to do this break music. Yeah, there we go. All right, 646-257-3920 is the number. In the better half, I'm going to be talking about the story of supposedly Trump has been paying the Breitbart people for favorable coverage. I feel like we've been giving Donald Trump a lot of favorable coverage on this program. I mean, I don't know that I've promoted him more than any other Republican candidate. And I want you to know that Donald Trump has not been funding this program at all. Now, we have two options. And frankly, I'm not sure which one I appreciate more. One is to put out a plea to Donald Trump to fund this program. I will continue to say that he should be the Republican nominee. And I will do it very vociferously. Or you can become a member. I'm not going to promote you as the appropriate Republican nominee. Nevertheless,
see, there's probably a membership level that you could reach.
We could actually maybe work on that.
Yeah, let's think about that.
But for the $10 a month, or even the dirty effing hippie rate, or even the French rate of $500 a month, where you become a French member, it's your support that makes this show possible. So become a member today. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY to get 10% off. MajorityReportKickback.com. That's where you can buy your Amazon crap. If you buy crap from Amazon, we get a little kickback. Just click on that link, bookmark it. Always buy your Amazon crap from there. And also, I will tell you, tomorrow we'll have the update on the Warby Parker poll as to what glasses I should get. So go to our Support the Sponsors page and support our sponsors. All right, folks. See you in the fun half.